Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to Cattlecast Reader's Roundtable edition. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined around the mic by Mari Garza and Cheryl Lindemann. Hey, ladies.
Hello.
Hello.
So it's spring. Things are growing. We've had some warm days. We've had some really, really, really wet days.
Yes.
Cattle has seeds. There's everything earth this month.
Right.
So that's sort of the direction we went for our topic today.
Yes, absolutely. Arbor Day, Earth Month, as I've heard it referred to recently. And it's perfect timing for us to talk about our seed sharing programs that we have. Seed sharing initiatives are, you know, all over the country and in libraries, but in other organizations where communities come together to offer seeds at various locations, mm-hmm. but also collect seeds that are given by traditional companies or actually saved by gardeners in their home gardens. And we have seed sharing at Cattle. So we have a seed library at several of our locations. This project first started at Foster and has now grown to, expanded to Okemos and has now grown to 9 of our branches, Dansville, Okemos, Holt, Mason, South Lansing, Williamston, Weberville, Stockbridge, and Leslie. And April is our kickoff for this and also runs into May. You can also drop off seeds as donations to your Weberville, Okemos, or Mason libraries. We did want to say that seeds go really fast. They're in our libraries now, so come in as soon as you can to get them. And we're also a member of the Michigan Seed Library Network. And each year we join 200 Michigan libraries to promote something called One Seed, One State. And this year we have a special seed. Each year is a unique seed variety. And this year's is Grand Rapids lettuce, which is uniquely Michigan, developed by Eugene Davis in the 1800s. And he's known for establishing the winter lettuce industry in Michigan, which is really kind of a
cool factoid. Yeah,
definitely. So if you want to know more information about the seed program, it's www.cadl.org/seeds.
And we'll have that in the notes, show notes.
Yes, we will. In addition to offering and collecting seeds, Cattle is once again bringing in the author Bevan Cohen to several of our locations in April and May. And you can go to www.cattle.org/events for that. And again, that'll be in our show notes. And Bevan is the author of many books that we have in our collection, including Saving Our Seeds, The Practice, and Philosophy.
Okay. That's a lot of information there.
Yeah.
But it's cool that Cattle's involved in all these things.
Yeah.
It kind of can give you some inspiration if you're not really a gardener like myself.
Yeah, and lettuce is a great way to start, and it's like 28 days or something like that.
Okay.
I mean, so you don't have to wait that long.
Yeah.
And you can grow it in a pot, so it's a really fun one this year.
Okay.
That's interesting.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and kick off our book highlights for this podcast. And the first title I have is actually a children's book. It's called No Dig, Children's Gardening Book, Easy and Fun Family Gardening. It's by Charles Dowding. And if you check our catalog, you will see that he's actually got a lot of books for adults with the theme of no digging involved. Yeah. And that to me sounds like, wait a minute, how does that even work?
Yeah.
But he, Charles Dowding is an English horticulturist, and he has definitely pioneered the movement of no digging to maintain a garden, and also promotes, you know, the whole organic soil idea or movement, management of your property dirt. And he's been doing this since 1983. He knows quite a bit about it. So if you check our catalog, you will find other books for specific types of vegetables or flowers or herbs and that sort of thing. But what he's basically promoting is for children, and really for anyone, taking perhaps cardboard and laying it over your dirt, because that will kind of tamp down the weeds and not give weeds so much access to sun, and presumably not so much access to water that falls. It's a very ambitious book, is what I'm going to say. The publisher says it's for ages, I think, 7 to 10. I'm going to say maybe it's more like for 9 to 12. It's a really nice book where he's got all sorts of ideas for, you know, what to do to raise seedlings, how to attract wildlife to your garden. And he also spends quite a bit of time, you know, kind of what he calls myth, you know, a spread on myth busting. Like, there is this idea that how could you possibly, you know, have a garden without digging up the land and, you know, doing all this stuff to it and then covering it up and laying it with certain things. I mean, he's really, I think, promoting an easier and a more approachable way to garden for both children and adults. He really encourages children. The reason I really like this book is that he encourages children to really observe what you're seeing. I mean, he gives the example, like when you're, you know, setting up your garden, you could probably put like a see-through pane, if possible, to see the composting and the dirt and the soil that's going on there. You don't see as much as you might think, but he does talk quite a bit about what's going on top of the soil. It's very, very dense, and I would love to see kids really get into gardening more so. And I can tell that in our system there is a lot of interest in gardening. Mm-hmm. Among families and children. Yeah. So that's a great book. And it's illustrated by Christina Litton. So hope you like it. And I want to say that it's just darling because, like, on the opening page, there's this picture of him. There's photographs and there's illustrations in the book. But there's this photograph of him in his little English cottage. It's so beautiful.
Oh, gosh, yes.
So, yeah. That's
I love it. That No Dig adult book is extremely popular as well and very enjoyable. And I believe that's one of the books I've read a lot of these, where this idea of chop and drop, when you actually have your fall plants, if you leave them over winter, and then literally chop them up into little pieces and let them fall right there. Because every bit of that falling matter is going to be what will help your soil.
Beneficial to your soil,
yeah,
for sure.
It's really cool.
For sure.
Okay. So my book... I don't usually bring things that aren't out yet, but this one kind of, it fit the topic too well, and it's due out actually on May 2nd, so it's totally holdable now. It's something you can kind of go out and get a little bit of a preview of if you want to check it out. It is Soil, the Story of a Black Mother's Garden. It's standing solidly at an intersection of its memoir, its poetry. She is a poet. It's nature writing, and it's a look at social justice as well. It's beautifully written. I mean, there is no question she is a poet. It describes, at heart, her experiences creating a prairie garden at her home in Fort Collins, Colorado. So she moves into a neighborhood with a homeowners association and big green lawns, and green lawns are not exactly native to Fort Collins, and she has this grand idea that she's going to basically create a prairie yard, a prairie project, prairie garden at her home. And it's sort of a back and forth. It's her working on the land. It's her talking about her life with her husband, life with her kids, life trying to write. It has some history of Black gardeners. It has... bits of, you know, factoids that sort of work their way in to help you really think about our relationship with nature, our things that kind of stick with me, like the 2008 Oxford Junior. She noted that the 2008 Oxford Junior Dictionary omitted words like sycamore, wren, crocus, and violet in favor of the technical terms blog, broadband, endangered, and celebrity. You know, it's the trade-offs we make and that happen in the world. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, there's some humor in it, in that she is, her partner in life is somebody who, they're learning together in terms of their relationship with gardening and nature as well. So she tells the story of they were both living in the San Francisco area. He is from New York, like properly New York, and New York City area. And so he it talks about him, them talking on the phone one day, and he's in a parking lot in San Francisco, and he's like, there's a duck on that car. And she's like, a duck? And he's like, asks the passerby, and they're like, it's a seagull. Like, so they learn. And they, whereas, you know, as they're laying down dirt at the house at Fort Collins, she's like, give me the thing with the pointy end, the digging thing with the pointy end. And, you know, they talk about, and I've seen this in other things, but she talks about they, you know, they don't know, but they learn and they explain it to each other. And, you know, somebody's driving and somebody's doing the research. They say, oh, that thing is called a, or, you know, that one's a seagull. You know, it's just things like, it's like, at least I knew it wasn't a pigeon. It's there's humor, there's some pain, there's, but it's just, I mean, I didn't, you know, I didn't know, I was aware of the name of Anne Bethel Spencer, who was a Harlem Renaissance poet, but I did not realize she was also a major gardener from Lynchburg, Virginia. And it's just sort of, it's the things that kind of come up. It's meandering, but it's beautifully done.
Yeah.
And it also made me pick up, we have a collection in the system called Tropic Cascade, which is a collection of her poetry. And again, it has some of that, you sort of see it repeat in some ways, that conversation of, I don't understand this, but we're going to explain, you know, I'm going to do the research while you're driving and we're going to make it make sense to each other. And that kind of relationship just is very, very interesting and appealing. But it also, that particular collection really is about parenting for the first time as well, and and nature and other things. So just the mix of memoir, poetry, activism is all very appealing.
Yeah, that sounds great. I was really excited to see the pre-pub alert on that one. That's just fantastic. Well, since it's Earth Month, I'm excited to bring this book because I feel like it's one of the most important works of environmental journalism to come along in a long time. This book is The Devil's Element, Phosphorus, and a World Out of Balance by Dan Egan. And Dan is the author of The Death and Life of the Great Lakes. And he writes that when he was working on that book in the mid-2010s, he dedicated a chapter to phosphorus. Back then, phosphorus seemed like the looming environmental crisis of our time, and no one was talking about it. Today, the problem is even worse, and still no one's talking about it.
Right.
So that brings us to this book. And if you look at the cover, it has this extremely huge green algal bloom on it, and that really sets the tone for the book. So if you know something about phosphorus, maybe you can pass on this one, but most of us really don't know that much about phosphorus. So it takes you, first it's riveting. It reads almost like a thriller. Parts of it read a little bit like horror, okay? That's the way this guy writes. I mean, just amazing. This is like the best narrative nonfiction. For someone who doesn't like nonfiction, I might recommend this book about phosphorus of all things.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it starts when phosphorus was really not discovered, but sort of pulled out as an element in an alchemical process in the 17th century in Hamburg, Germany. And Hamburg repeats through the book, okay, again and again and again. So it takes us from this glowing, extremely dangerous, explosive, I mean, if you hold a little chunk of phosphorus, your hand might fall off. It's going to burn your hand, okay? So everything about this element is sort of wild, but we absolutely need it to live, all of us. We need it in our food supply to live. It's been one of those resources that's in some ways, and this is what the book is about, it's overabundant and it's underabundant. So what's happening is we use it in our to grow food. It ends up then being sort of excreted, mainly through manure, cow manure, into the ground. There's too much for the ground to capacitate. So then it runs off into the water. And it goes all the way from Midwestern farmers down the Mississippi River. It affects people in Louisiana. It affects the whole Gulf. It greatly affects Florida. It contributes to ocean, dead areas, algal blooms that were so toxic that at one point they poisoned the Ohio water supply. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of really kind of grim aspects to this thing that we don't really know that much about. It was an extreme factor in a die-off of Lake Huron And so this book takes you all over the place. It takes you from to World War II to phosphorus bombs in the middle of Germany, really deadly bombs. It takes you to the Lake Huron environmental crisis. It takes you to the genesis of soaps, of the soap TV shows, which were really set there to get women to buy detergent that was super sudsy and extremely high in phosphorus until they realized how damaging that was for waterways. So it kind of goes all over the place. It also talks about how actually mining the element is hard, and we're losing that. We're losing our supplies, and we could hit peak phosphorus like peak oil. And there are estimates it could be 40 years, could be 100 years. And there are certain parts of the world that have the most phosphorus. One is in the Sahara. But certain countries own that phosphorus, and it's at this point, it's not us. Okay, so we have mines. We have some places in Florida to get it. So this is becoming like a really serious, possibly serious situation. It also has some really hopeful notes, taking you back to Hamburg, who is now mining phosphorus out of their wastewater system to actually reuse. And there's actually a project at University of Michigan to pull phosphorus out of waste and reuse it that way. So this is sort of a direction he's saying, you know, we really need to look at this kind of quickly. We need to figure out how to use this waste material that's damaging our waterways. We need to use it differently. So just an absolutely riveting book and really interesting, and I really encourage anybody, especially in the Great Lakes, to read it because it really has a lot of impact on our Great Lakes in particular. Mm-hmm. So,
wow. That was really, really interesting. My next title is Black Beach, A Community, An Oil Spill, and the Origin of Earth Day. And this is by Shauna and John Stith. It's illustrated by Maribel Lechuga. And this is a children's nonfiction title that kind of addresses a bit of, you know, how did Earth Day get started? Well, in 1969, in Santa Barbara, California, there was a huge oil spill. And the book kind of approaches it from, you know, the perspective of a fictional character. There's a little girl who's in a classroom and, you know, her teacher shares the news that there's been this big oil spill. And she lives in the area. And, she, you know, both she and her parents don't really have a full grasp of what it's like until they actually get to the beach and the shore and they see, you know, that it takes a while for the oil to start coming up onto the beach. But when they do see it, it is just a devastating scene. And the illustrator does a really great job because everything turns black. All sorts of seabirds are just covered in oil. And what happened is that it was the, the Union Oil's Platform Alpha. This is it was like an oil contraption in the sea. And there was something that, you know, a cap of some kind blew off and the oil just started gushing into the ocean. So this book, it's kind of, this event kind of galvanized the, I guess you could say, our government deciding, hey, we got to start paying attention to this. And it was in 1970, after Gaylord Nelson, who is a senator from Wisconsin, kind of spearheaded this, like, you know, we've got to start paying more attention to these sorts of events. And April 22nd, 1970 was our first Earth Day, I guess, celebration, but Day of Remembrance, where we're going to really start, you know, calling attention to these sorts of issues. I really liked it because there was, you know, again, this is a fictional account of the little girl, but I mean, they were collecting oil into bottles and sending it to Washington, D.C. That part, again, I believe is fictional, but just lots of different ways that the children were involved in calling attention to this issue. And because of television, you know, really becoming huge, at, you know, at that time, lots of people being able to see the images, it really, really kind of reiterated, like, something has to get moving and changing. I really like that there was a really nice section in the back that is what we often call back matter. There's a nice timeline. There's a bibliography. There's, yeah, really nice context. And also, just, you know, today, almost every country in the world celebrates Earth Day.
Really?
And just kind of gives you some ideas, you know, what kind of things can we do? You know, we can reuse water bottles everywhere we go. We can carpool. We can consider not having a car. Hello. We can turn off the lights when you leave a room. I mean, things that we all have heard when, as children. But, yeah, really a nice book to present to children and classrooms.
Excellent. Cool. So my last book is actually so we said it's Earth Day and everything, but it's also Arbor Day is April 28th. And I have been sitting on this book for a while and decided I was going to give it a try, and I very much enjoyed it. Divining by Maureen Dunphy. This is, The Michigan Ties is what made me pick it up. It's a divining, a memoir in trees. Maureen Dunphy, her previous title actually was Great Lakes Island Escapes, Ferries and Bridges to Adventure. It was a Michigan notable. And interestingly, she notes in this book that that experience of being a Michigan notable and doing Night of Notables was actually helped to solidify what she wanted to do next. She explores different instances in her life. So it is a memoir. She's looking at different points in her life. But through there's a tree that sort of is always present for part of the story. And so each chapter, there's individual essays. Each chapter that is dedicated to a tree. There was a little bit of discussion about the tree and what of that and the type of species and things that, you know, sometimes it might be one of the trees she finds is infected with something, and she's doing the research to try and figure out what has happened. And another one of the trees is Carl. If you're not aware, Carl is the tree at the Michigan History Center in the center of the and when I said the notable experience, I was serious about that white pine was something that just sort of helped her decide, okay, yeah, I'm going to talk about these trees. So there is a chapter on white pines, and it does mention Carl by name. But where Camille Dungy's memoir is sort of a meandering related stories, Dunphy's is really more distinct essays. Not to say either of those is better or worse. It's just that depending on how you read, Dunphy's might be easier to pick up and put down. But she's going from moment to moment. There are different trees that she associates with different phases of the pandemic. There are trees that she associates with her first grandchild. It's those types of things. And the intro actually is her trying to decide what tree to plant in her father's memorial in her father's honor. So it's a really interesting way of doing memoir for me. I'm learning different bits about the trees that she's talking about. And it's very, while it's not all Michigan, it's a lot Michigan. I mean, she is a Michigan resident and grew up in different areas. And so that's, you get, you know, summers in Houghton and experiences, you know, in and around the old tree, old forests of Michigan, or discovering that there still are old forests of Michigan. So it's just an interesting book that is in some ways very local and very inspiring that way. But it's also, I just found it to be a nice way of doing, an interesting way of doing memoir as well.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. Wow, very good. Excellent. My last book is by an author who I think I've talked about all of her books here, so I think I could say I'm kind of a fan. The author is Catherine May, and she started with the book Wintering and then has moved on. This is her third book. Her second book was actually The Electricity of Every Living Thing, which is probably the most recent one that I talked about. And in that book, she actually talks about her adult diagnosis of autism, and it's also a nature memoir.
And I thought that I wanted to bring this book because of Earth Day, because all of her books are rooted in Earth and nature, mm-hmm. but also because it's Autism Awareness Month and she's an autistic creator. And she talked a lot about autism in the last book. This one, it's just briefly mentioned. But this book is called Enchantment, Awakening Wonder in an Anxious Age, again by Catherine May. And what this is a series of essays, and they're based around the elements, so water, earth, fire. And she talks about how she hit that stage that we've talked about here on the podcast, really just burnout. I mean, it's post-pandemic to some degree, if you can call it that. But just what we've all been through, just, you know, lots of work, lots of, you know, kind of just to that phase where she's just tired. Mm-hmm. And she realizes that she's just sort of lost that spark. She's really struggling. She's tired, that sort of thing. And what she thinks about is just this idea that she's sort of lost enchantment. You know, that spark, those moments, and they don't have to be extraordinary. Often they're the most ordinary. Or she says you're out seeking a certain thing, like a meteor shower. And it was actually another experience in the book that was the enchanting experience. So it's sort of that idea of like pulling yourself out and just taking that walk and seeing what comes to you. And then those moments of enchantment. So through these elements, she walks and she swims and she goes to, you know, an ancient spring. She goes to all these different places. And she has these moments where she starts coming back into herself. And it's very personal. She's witty. She's funny. She's honest. She's a beautiful writer. There's nice history in there. There's a lot with memory, memory of, you know, grandparents that are gone or the town where they live, that sort of thing. There's so much that pulls into this. Parenting, her relationship with her husband, you know, comes into the book. But I love this book in that it sort of gives you the reader time to sit and think about those moments of enchantment for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And they're all extremely different. Mm-hmm. And to sort of think about, okay, she says, you know, just get out there. And at the end, they go to a dark sky park type area to try to catch a meteor shower. But they actually instead catch moon shadows. And, you know, just like in the song, you know, and it's sort of like that kind of idea of, you know, just stop and try to give your attention to something, and that's sort of when the magic, the everyday magic happens. Mm-hmm. So just a really lovely read, Enchantment by Catherine May.
Beautiful.
Wow, that does sound really nice. My last book is Henry, Like Always. It's book one by Jen Bailey, and the illustrator is Mika Song. Really, really liked this book. You may be familiar with A Friend for Henry, which was a picture book that came out maybe about a year or two ago. And this particular book actually is more of an early reader, or, you know, kind of like a little mini chapter book, because it does have several chapters. And I want to tell you about Henry. He is a person who is quiet. He likes to read. He likes sharing. He is autistic, or on the autism spectrum, as some would say, and making friends can be difficult for him. This particular book I really, really like because it kind of gives you an everyday perspective of what it's like for Henry to be in a classroom and going through, you know, just there's a you know, this first early chapter book, the teacher announces that instead of having share time on Friday, we're going to do a parade. And, you know, each chapter kind of goes through like, you know, there's a change. Why? Or, you know, but we usually do this. And there's a lot of repetition. And he does find acceptance with, you know, the change. And he also makes friends along the way. I really, really like this book because it is promoting not just, you know, it gives any child who happens to be on the spectrum a chance to see themselves, you know, in a classroom reflected in a book, but also gives readers a chance to see a child like Henry also in the classroom. So there's this like mutual understanding of like, hey, mm-hmm. I participate just like anyone else in the classroom. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited about this series. I hope you'll check it out. We just got them in our building, so they should be in our catalog pretty soon. or out in our branches pretty soon.
Very cool.
Sounds great.
All right. So I think one of the themes that we wanted to get across today is go outside.
Yeah. Yay. Yeah.
Take a book with you, but go outside.
Take a book. Yep, read.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Happy reading.